Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. For the next 2 hours, you're kind of stuck with me, if it's okay with you. All you have to do is give us a call. That's a car show. So you're allowed to call in and tell me what kind of car you have, how many miles it's got on it, and we'll discuss the symptoms. And I'll ask you questions and see if we can kind of get close to the symptoms. Sometimes I can get close. Sometimes there's just not enough information, but I'll tell you, help you, if you're interested, what to say when you take your car in. That's kind of important, is what to say when you take it in. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson's has been in Mesa for probably 40 or 50 years, but this shop since 1970. Thompson has been providing really great car care, light truck care, maintenance services to the Mesa area for a very long time. Both Brian and his wife Thelma have families that go way back to the 50s and the 60s for car repair. So all you have to do is stop by Thompson's and you'll understand why I think it's a great shop in Mesa. It's on Main Street just east of Stapley. And what's important here is to know that it's the only shop in Mesa. Some of them have applied and they're missing some information or they're missing some criteria. Like we have to have 5 years in business and you have to have certain insurances. Some of them don't. So Thompson's is the only place in Mesa. I'm sorry, that's all I've got to offer you, but it's still a good shop. It's on Main Street just east of Stapley. excuse me. I should have muted that. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to tell you a couple of times over the show. I am the trustee for an estate, and involved in the estate is a 2014 Mercedes-Benz. It's a sport utility vehicle. It's called an ML350, and it has 51,000 miles. This car is white, and it is loaded to the gills. And I got to drive it the other day, and I'm not telling you this because I want you to buy it. I'm telling you this because it's the truth. It's probably one of the finest cars I've ever driven. It has all-wheel drive, and it has all kinds of fancy stuff, like it has a lane tracking package. So if you veer out of your lane, it'll shake the steering wheel at you. If there's a car next to you and you turn on your right turn signal, it'll warn you there's a car next to you. It's like flying a jet airliner, I suspect, because it's got so many buttons. But I figured out that there's this little round kind of a mouse right on the center columns, and it really gives you everything you need. Anyway, the reason I'm selling it is I'm selling it on behalf of the trust. I've done some maintenance on this car because the people that own the car have been friends of mine for 50 years. So the wholesale condition on this car is $19,000, $19,000 to $20,000, depending on whether it's clean or extra clean. And I think this car is pristine, but nevertheless, they bought this car for $67,000, $64,000 in March of 14. So today it's 5 years old with 51,000 miles. It has an extended warranty that's transferable up to 7 years and 75,000 miles. So I'm going to just read you some of the cool stuff it's got. All-wheel drive, four-door sport package, 7-speed transmission. It's got a 3.5-liter V6, fancy 19-inch wheels, sunroof, heated seats, and all kinds of eucalyptus wood package and rear camera and accessory chrome package. Anyway, the car has a value somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000. And what I did is I looked it up this way. Wholesale indicates a number that's going to go through the auction at the variety of auctions in the Phoenix area. So I went to Mannheim and I found out this car typically sells on a wholesale basis for $20,000. Then I called a couple of dealerships and I said, what's the trade-in value? And they said $21,300. Then the private party sale at KBB.com, KellyBlueBook.com, is $23,400. And then retail, this is what a dealer would ask for, it is $25,700. $25,715. If you take all that average from the highest to the lowest, it's $22,500. So if you want to place a bid, you're going to place a bid, and the end of the auction is the end of this month at midnight. Whoever has the highest bid the end of this month at midnight gets the car. I have the ability to sign off the title. There is no lien, and like I said, it's a pristine car. And if you want to go look at it, you're going to have to get with me on email. I can arrange to have you look at it because it's at our shop, and I've already had it detailed, and it's in a hermetically sealed building. If you believe that, don't. So, mark at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com. Let me tell you a secret. Renee and I just passed 45 years of marriage, and I wanted to buy her a special car, this car. So she had the opportunity to drive it, and she says, there's no way in God's green earth I'm going to let you buy this car for me. And I said, why? It's a great car, and Mercedes has always been a safe car. She says, no. She says, I'll never figure out all the stuff. She says, there's just way too many buttons. And I said, yeah, but there's that owner's manual, and just like all the other cars. Anyway, as you can tell, I lost that argument. So anyway, again, 64,000 when it was new, March of 14, which is 5 years ago. And the average for all the wholesale, trade-in, private party, and retail is $22,591. So I think that's a pretty good price, because really the private party sale is $23,000. So this is like $1,000 under. I think that's what it's going to go for. If you want to bid, mark at marksalem.com. If you want to see the car, mark at marksalem.com. 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960. And I think we've got a caller. Gil, who have we got?
We have Lori.
Lori, can I help you?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a snowbird from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Been driving myself out here to Surprise, Arizona from Pittsburgh for 15 years. And I've been driving a Vandura 2500 GMC conversion van.
Okay.
And I would love to trade it in for that Mercedes, but I'm not giving this van up. But 10 years ago, I'm listening to your program, and I heard on the radio that there was a woman's workshop. So I got the information and went down to Mike's Auto Tech at Belmont Avenue in Glendale.
Yes.
And I've been going there ever since. And so I understand he's having another woman's workshop, and I would highly recommend a woman who wants to learn more about her vehicle to give them a call. And I thank you very much for having him as one of your sponsors, because they're a great bunch of people, and they did not ever rip me off. So,
well, good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I've been a faithful listener.
Well, thank you very much for that. Folks, she's talking about Mike Draskovic at Mike's Auto Tech in Glendale. I've known Mike for 20-plus years. As a matter of fact, because I made a terrible mistake, Mike was going to be flying with me today. Mike was going to sit next to me today. But here's what happened. I left the ranch in Payson last night at about 10 o'clock, and I knew I needed to be ready for radio this morning. I forgot all my radio equipment in Payson. So this morning at about, 8 o'clock, my wife says, go get your radio equipment and let's get it hooked up. And it's at that point I knew I was in really big, big, big trouble. It's an hour and 41 minutes from there north. So I hop in my truck. I say, see you later. My wife's having a garage sale. And I go, I got to go. So I drive up to Payson, and I got on the air on time, and everything is fine. But I left Mike back in Tempe. So, Mike, if you're listening to me, I am so sorry. If I would have had your doggone cell number, I could have called you, but I don't. You have mine, but I don't have yours. But I'll get it tomorrow, I promise. But Mike Draskovic from Mike's Auto Tech was supposed to be with me. We'll reschedule him. And Lori is right. Mike's a good guy when it comes to communicating about car repair. And car repair, oh, by the way, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair, there's a difference between the women and the men. The men will come in and tell us what they think it is. The women will come in and give us the symptoms. And really, the symptoms are far more valuable than what you think it is. So when someone comes in and says, you know, I think it's the mass airflow sensor, and I checked and the mass airflow sensor is $400, and the symptoms appear to be the same as I have, and I talked to a guy on YouTube, and he said he was sure of that, and so I'd like you to install a mass airflow sensor. that's a bad conversation. The customer has diagnosed it himself. He's instructing you to repair it. And many of us have a form that the customer must sign under those conditions that says, I accept full responsibility for the success of this repair. And so I'm not going to warranty your diagnosis that it's the sale's final. And so that's kind of a bad way to start off. The women will come in and say, the car runs perfectly except in really hot days. And in the hot days, it just doesn't run smooth. It doesn't idle. And there has been the check engine light on, but I don't really know what that's saying. So what do you normally do? And the answer is well, normally we go in and look at the reason why the check engine light is on. And then that will send us in a particular area of fuel or spark or, you know, stuff like that. And then we'll have to diagnose it. So your checkout will be between $50 and $150, and I'm giving you a wide open range because shops all over the valley are in that range. And most of us kind of start low and move our way up if we need more diagnostic money. But nevertheless, you're going to go in there, and you're going to see that it has a mass airflow sensor code. So you're going to go drive it, and you're going to know what the numbers should be. And you're determining that the numbers are wrong. So the question is why? Why isn't the mass airflow sensor seeing what you know is good numbers? And here's why. There's an air filter box, and then there's this big hose that feeds all the air into the motor. Okay? And the mass airflow sensor's job is to tell the computer, wow, he's moving lots of air, his foot's on the floor. Or the opposite, the car's just idling. So the computer now matches the fuel flow with the air coming into the engine. So here's the problem. Remember that hose I told you between the air filter and the motor and the mass airflow sensor? They split. And usually it's behind the mass airflow sensor. So the engine's really getting more. The engine and the mass airflow sensor is actually relaying on a 1 to 10 scale that there's a 4 amount of air. 4. But in reality it's 6. Because we have this air leak. Well, the hose is peanuts compared to the mass airflow sensor. So you wrap it with duct tape, you go drive it, boom, problem gone. So you go, okay, I need a hose. So then you call the customer and say, I've identified this intake hose is bad, and the hose is like $62, and I'll plug it in for you for free, and that's it, plus the diagnostic. So that's how it works. So if you have a question about any kind of car, we talk about symptoms, year, make, and model of the car, and then symptoms, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you live outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, I have an 888 number for you. You're welcome to call. 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696 for those of you on iHeartRadio and stuff like that. We'll be back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. There's a good shop at I-17 and Bell Road. It's called Kurtz Automotive. I've known Kurtz for many years, and Jeff and Eric are his two major right-hand and left-hand guys. And between Kurt, who's a Master ASC Certified Technician, and Eric and Jeff, who are also ASC Master Certified Technicians, sometimes I'll throw a really difficult car their way, and frankly, don't tell them, but they're batting 100%. So they haven't not been able to fix anything from someone in the geographical area of their store that I have sent there. So if you live I-17 in Bell, northeast corner, Kurtz Auto, great place to start. Let's real quick, before we go to the phones, I had a guy call me up not too long ago, and he kept talking about a hesitation at 40 and 50 and 60 miles an hour. The vernacular is wrong. That's an engine miss. That's not a hesitation. A hesitation is when you're at a traffic light and you give it the gas and the car goes, ooh, that's a hesitation. The engine falls on its face the minute you hit the throttle, and then it comes back alive. An engine miss is when you're driving down the road, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, or maybe da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's an engine miss. So it's the vernacular that makes a difference, but if you can just duplicate it with your mouth, we'll figure the rest out. Let's go to the phones, and let's start with Cornell. Cornell, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
I heard you on the radio that ladies are better than men communicating.
Yeah.
That's true, because I'm not good communicator. Anyway, I do have 2005 Prius, 286,000 miles. My son went to Utah a month ago, and in the way to Utah from Phoenix, 300 miles, the overheat light came on.
Okay.
Anyway, he made it all the way. They changed the thermostat and the radiator cap. He made it all the way home with light on and off. I took it to a mechanic. They changed the water pump, again, the thermostat, pull all the air out. The only time I see this is when the car is driving on the freeway. If I drive it on the street, it's fine. The lower hose, when it's supposed to be hot, it's cold. And the upper hose is hot. And when I turn the heater on, and that time, there is cold air. It's supposed to be hot air. And I was wondering
I don't want you to start looking at the gauges anymore. This is what I want you to do. First of all, there's good news, because if he drove it all the way far away back to Phoenix, and it was okay, then he didn't cook the motor. That's what you should be thankful for. Number two,
right.
What you're describing is a temperature issue, and I want to know what the top heater hose feels like, or the top radiator hose feels like. Just like you shake a man's hand, I want you to grab a hold of the upper hose and give me an idea of how hot it is. I don't care about the gauges. I don't care about any of that. What really concerns me is what is the temperature of the engine? So if you grab a hold of it and you say, Mark, I couldn't hold onto it for more than 2 or 3 seconds, bingo, I know it's warm. But that's not an overheat. Then if you say, I can hold onto the heater hose till my next birthday, then yeah, we're running cold. So we have to start there, and we have to determine exactly. Now, the heater doesn't work. There's no way after a long period of time that engine isn't going to create enough hot water to make the heater work, unless, of course, the infrastructure for the heater is bad. So if the blend door is bad, if the control head is bad, if the vacuum to the heater control valve is not there, if the electronics to the heater control valve isn't telling it to open and close, there's all those moving parts. But what you really need to do is figure out how long can you handshake that upper hose. So first thing in the morning, you grab a hold of it, and you know you can hang on to it for a minute or two or three or four. So then drive it to work. Just pop the hood, grab a hold of that upper radiator hose, and how long can you hang on to it? If you can only hang on to it for 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, and I got to take my hand off of it, that's operating temperature. If it's above operating temperature, it's going to be spewing coolant all over the place.
Right. And the other thing that you're saying, this, it came in my mind that, let's say, I drove the car from work to home, and in the morning I open the radiator cap, it's got pressure and the coolant pops, whatever it is, and then it puts the coolant in the reservoir.
Yeah.
It will not.
It's supposed to. When the engine gets hot, water expands, and we put the radiator cap gives way and put some of that hot coolant in the jug, in the overflow jug. Now, when you park it at night, then as the engine cools down, it sucks that coolant back into the engine. Therefore, the engine's always full. So you're going far astray from the issue. Let me just tell you one thing. If he would have cooked that motor, then it would have used 100 gallons of water to get home. And you didn't say
right.
a word about them putting water in it. You didn't say a word about it running poorly. So all you need to do is thank your Lord that he didn't cook your motor. And whatever's gone on now, it can be fixed. Maybe he cooked the sending unit, and the sending unit's bad and not reporting to the gauge. I don't know. I can't fix it over the radio. But when you take it in, just tell him about the upper hose, and that will help him out. Thank you, Cornell. Good luck to you. Brad, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, I got a 2014 Kia Rio, 1.6 liter, 140,000 miles, and I've got a PO420 coming up, and I'm not convinced yet that it's the catalytic converter or the O2 sensors. I noticed that my long-term fuel trim is creeps up, you know, in the 14% range, I believe is what I'm looking at. And the last time it threw the code here, it came up with a short-term fuel trim on a freeze frame data at minus 7%, okay. 7.0.
What's normal long-term fuel trim?
I believe around 10.
Okay, see, that's the problem. That's the problem.
Okay.
You don't really know. You're dancing all around the issue, and you don't really. You're trying to figure this out using information that you get off the web or YouTube or whatever. Here's the deal.
Exactly.
Okay. Here's the deal. An oxygen sensor on your car, you probably have pre and post. One before the cat, one after the cat. The oxygen.
I do.
Okay. The oxygen sensor has 5 volts. Low is lean, high is rich. In the middle is 2.5. Okay? So if I got 3 running in the front, which is a tad rich, and I've got 1 coming out the back, boom, I'm good. That catalytic converter is converting. It's lit. It's working. Gas is coming into the cat, and there's nothing coming out of the back of the cat. Bingo. Now, if the front one says 3 and the back one says 3, then I need to temp gun the cat, and I need to know its lighting, because one of them's lying to me if the cat is hot. So you go through this whole process, and you're reading the O2 sensor. Then you make the O2 sensor run rich. You add an abundance of fuel to the motor over a period of 5 seconds. And then all of a sudden, all the O2 sensors scream 5. Then you create a big vacuum leak, and all the O2 sensors scream 1. So you're not even close to the repair. What needs to happen is somebody needs to test the veracity of both catalytic converters and all 4 O2 sensors. And frankly, most everybody will do that for $75 to $125. But unless you understand the readings you're getting, you're just spinning your wheels, so to speak. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. It's 10:30. We'll be back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. We're talking about cars, 602-508-0960. I got some business to take care of. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968. He's the only transmission shop in Phoenix I recommend. Phil has been around a very long time. You only need to meet him and shake his hand to know that he's built just about every transmission since Fred Flintstone all the way to these new electronics. So he does a good job. He's located at 40th Street in Washington. So no matter where you live in the Phoenix area, if you want someone to look at a transmission problem, may I suggest you stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange and have them take a look. Real quick, before I go back to the callers, we just got done talking with Brad. Brad, here's the problem. You can't give me enough information to diagnose your car. I can't confirm or deny the direction you're going in. It's just a matter of understanding how the system works. If the front O2 sensor, again, on a 1 to 5 scale, the front O2 sensor says 3 and the back one says 3, and the catalytic converter is 600 degrees, one of them's a liar. Now, if you want to go throw 4 O2 sensors at it, or a couple of cats at it, or all of that, plan on spending $2,000. So I suggest that no matter how you guess, the diagnostic fee from a shop would be cheaper. So that's just my offer to you. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. I'm working on my 3.8 liter V6 GM, and I'm replacing the lower intake manifold gasket. So I'm taking off the fuel rail, the fuel injectors, and it's got 200,000 miles on it. Do you recommend sending those fuel injectors into one of these injector flow test, clean, replace filter, for about $20 a fuel injector?
Or you could just put some fancy-dancy gas additive in the tank that will make your injectors look brand new. Now, please, I'm not making fun of you. I'm making fun of the idea, okay? All right. They'll make your injectors love you, and they'll spit gasoline like they've never spit before, and you'll have all kinds of power, and all of that is BS. So the answer to your question is no. You don't have any symptoms. You can take them out, take them down, and have them cleaned. I've got a cleaner that I use about once every 5 years. And I have one with calibrated jars, and you put all the injectors in, and you cycle them, and you run them through an ABC cycle, and we're measuring CCs on how much each one's squirting. It never has been a big difference. It's never made a big difference. So my question to you is real simple. I'll bet before this all started, not considering that you're replacing the gasket, obviously, for a problem, but this thing has probably always had a really nice, smooth idle. And if it has, that's the first place an injector is going to raise its ugly head. Then, at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, you're going to have a ta-da, ta-da-da-da. You're going to have something like that. So if you don't have either one of those, I'd save your money and I'd just put it back together. That's my opinion.
So you don't think the filters inside the injectors would be clogged up after 200,000 miles?
Well, let me ask you a question. What's the micron value of the fuel filter that feeds those injectors?
I'm going to guess 5 microns.
Yeah. And what's the little net on the mouth of the injector?
Twenty.
Okay. So the question is if we're sending gasoline through the filter and it's going to get 5 microns, and we've got a 20 micron screen in front of the input of the injectors, you're going to do what? I mean,
Not filter anything.
Yeah. So really and truly, yeah, I'm going to change your question. Mark, are you going to sell the customer on any motor? You got the injectors right there. Are you going to sell them new injectors? No. No symptoms? No injectors. Are you going to take and clean them? Nope. I might buff the ends of them off with a stainless steel brush. That might be all I do. But the answer to your question is save your money, put it all back together, and I'm kind of impressed that you tackled this job because it's not an easy one, as you already know.
Yeah. Hey, thanks. Save me $100. Thanks.
All right. Good enough. Thank you very much. The issue is symptoms versus, spending the money. You can't go to the doctor and say, I know I'm going to have a heart attack sometime in the near future. Can we just go ahead and put new valves in my heart? It doesn't make sense. Okay, Kevin, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2008 Dodge Ram 1500 with the Hemi engine.
Okay.
It has 140,000 miles on it, and at about 135,000, I started having an AC problem.
Okay.
It blows cold, but intermittently, and it's blowing cold, and then all of a sudden through the vents, I hear like a type sound.
Okay.
If I stop and pop the hood, you can see the compressor, I guess I'd call it turning on, shutting off.
That's
turning
called
on,
cycling.
Shutting off.
The compressor's cycling. Okay. All right. Well, this is easy. It's you.
Okay.
I'll bet you drive around, because that thing is really well insulated, I bet you drive around with either speed 1 or speed 2.
What do you mean speed 1 or speed 2?
On the fan.
No, normally. Well, yeah. Yeah, okay. That's probably true, except for in the summer, then it's on high.
Okay. Well, if you just go to the extremes, and if you run the fan switch up to high, and you go to maximum recirculatory, everything will be fine. But what's happening is the compressor cycling on and off because it's freezing up. So you're blowing across an ice cube, and you're trying to melt the ice cube. So if I take 100 pounds of air and blow across the ice cube, I'm going to melt that thing pretty fast.
Sure.
So I just want you to – now, there's one of two things going on here. Either you're running at a too low of speed and you're freezing up the evaporator. And so you shut it off. I bet it pukes a bunch of water on the ground. You may be there to see it, maybe not. But if you go to high speed and max on your recirculatory, I'll bet it goes away. But if it continues to cycle the compressor, it could be low on refrigerant as well.
Okay.
So we have machines that'll suck the refrigerant out, clean it all up, and we get 30 ounces, and you take 38 ounces. So we're going to clean yours up and put it right back in, and we're going to sell you 8 ounces, and you're going to spend between $100 and $150 for the whole thing. But now we have an electronic dipstick for the Freon in your car. So no longer do we do it by guessing by golly. We don't have to set temperatures up and look at the moon and the stars and where the sun is at and how much air is across the radiator. We don't have to do that anymore. So it's much more precise, and it'll be fine. So speed up the fan, roll the windows down if you get too nippy, and I'll bet the problem goes away. And if it does,
okay. You
need to go out. Now, do you know what the difference between recirculatory and normal is?
Well, I think the recirculatory takes the air that's inside the cab.
And recirculates it.
Yeah.
But normal, what is the difference in normal?
No, that I don't know.
Okay, that's okay. My wife doesn't either. And my brothers don't either. Normal, I'm taking outside air, cooling it, and putting it in the cab. You got to have the window down. Think of normal as a swamp cooler. Have you ever lived in a house with a swamp cooler?
Sure.
Okay. So normal's a swamp cooler, and then recirc is air conditioning. So when you go to normal, you have to drop a window down, otherwise you're blowing into a can of beer. You're just blowing into a pop bottle. So nothing's going to work. So in normal, you got to drop down. For instance, let's pretend your girlfriend's got too much perfume on. She's sitting in the passenger side, right? And the don't even say it because I'm not going there. I hope your wife's listening because I'm making a joke. Your girlfriend's over there. She's got a lot of perfume on. And it's driving you crazy. And you're going to drive from here to Tucson to go to a party. So you drop her window just a smidge. You go to normal. All the air's blown into the cab, and then it's blown out her window. So you don't have to put up with the smell. That's how it works. So try that, and I'll... go ahead.
And I just noticed something. I looked at my my instrument panel, and you're right. I haven't been using the recirculatory. I've just been using the outside air setting. So I bet that does fix it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see what happens. But thank you very much for calling. I got to take a break. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Forty-six minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, our phone number, if you'd like to join us, is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area and you're listening to us on iHeart at 888-960-9696, 888-960-9696. I want to touch base with Kevin real quick. When you're on recirculatory, there is no openings in the cabin compartment of your car. We're taking air from the feet of the passenger, we're cooling it off, and we're sending it right back to you. So recirculatory, think of it as a circle. So if the passenger has stinky feet, you want to go to normal because you're recirculating the smell of their feet throughout the car. Normal is we're taking air from outside, actually in front of the windshield. We're taking air, we're cooling it off, and we're shoving it at you. You have to drop a window down because we're blowing air into the cab. But if you don't have a window down a little bit, then the air can't escape. And so it's like blowing into a pop bottle. You won't make lots of progress. So recirculatory is easy. It recirculates. It's like the air conditioning in your house. But normal is, those of you, us old enough to live with a swamp cooler, the swamp cooler never worked if you didn't open some windows. And that's what normal is. It'll work just fine. It's just a matter of your personal preference. That's it. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have an old Volvo, and I need somebody to help me with the mixture on the carburetors. You know anybody that's got a gas analyzer?
Can't we do this manually?
Well, there's adjustments, but, you know, how do you know you've got it right?
I can tell you. Are you doing idle or are you doing air-fuel mixture?
Air-fuel mixture.
Okay. First of all, you warm it up good. And you know air-fuel mixture is delivering fuel at idle, yes?
Right.
Okay. So you watch your tachometer, and you just close your eyes and put your hand on the motor and just sit there. And then you back out the screw maybe three turns. And then you slowly go in at a quarter time. And you're going to go, and then you're going to hit this. You're going to drop 50 RPM. You just start squeezing off fuel at idle because there was a drop in the RPM. So you back it up that quarter turn and go to the next one. Now, how many carbs you got on the Volvo? Two, three, one?
Two, yeah.
Okay.
Two.
So you go back and forth. Now, you got to be warm. You got to have that upper radiator hose warm, good and hot. And that's all we do. Now, yes, we can do it with a gas analyzer. You're looking for somebody to test the CO. So you're trying to shut off the fuel that's running out the tailpipe and dripping. But I'm teaching you to do the same thing. That idle screw just shuts off fuel at idle. So all you're doing is you're opening it up and saying, okay, I'm going to give you... It's like opening up a faucet for your garden hose. So you're just going to screw that down until all of a sudden you get an RPM drop. Usually you can feel it, or if your eyes are closed, you can hear it. And at that point...
I want to lean it up until the RPMs drop?
Yeah, and then back it off a quarter or half a turn.
Let me tell you what, it's not a screw, it's a nut on the bottom of the SU carburetors. I don't know if you've ever seen those or not.
Yep.
But it screwed down all the way, lean as it'll go. And RPM went up relatively about 500 RPM from where I had it set before. So I'm probably where I ought to be.
Well, now if they're seated... If you've seated the air-fuel mixture screws, you're getting fuel from some other circuit. The float bowl is too high. The floats are too high. But somewhere or another, because if we shut off all the fuel at idle, it should die.
No, this is a mixture adjustment.
Well, is it mixture of air and fuel, or fuel or air, or which?
If you've never seen an SU carburetor, it's kind of hard to describe, but it raises and lowers the jet inside the carburetor.
Okay. Well.
And it's up as far as it'll go, which is, it's running great. I mean, can't complain there. Is there anything I can do, look at the spark plugs?
Sure. If they're white, then you're running a little lean. If they're more on the black side, you're running a little rich. And if they're tan, you're right on the money.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I'll go that route.
Well, and if this, in fact, is something that's going to raise or lower... The question still is, does that screw control fuel or air? That's
well,
important.
There's a separate adjustment for idle.
No, I'm not even talking about idle. I'm talking about what the carburetors deliver. And I'm very familiar with your carburetors. I'm just trying to...
Okay.
Your carburetor, the idle circuit, has it's called an air control mixture or a fuel control mixture. So most of the time, it's going to control fuel only, not air, but fuel. So we're just going to kind of torque it down, or not torque it, but just screw it down until it goes ta-ta-ta-ta, and then you back it up. That's what is pretty much on most all the carburetors. Now, that's a fuel one. Sometimes we have an air screw, and it's the same way. You screw it down until you lose some RPM, and then you back it off a half turn, and the RPM comes back. Those are called sweet spots. Now, what part of town do you live in?
Sunny Slope.
Okay. The only guy I know that really loves Volvos is IMM, and it's in the northeast part of Tempe, and he knows Volvos as good as anybody I've ever met. So if you wanted to go over there and talk to him, keep in mind he's not going to talk to you for a long time for free, but if you said to him, I'd like you to set my carburetors the best you can, and I'd like to watch you, and I promise to keep my mouth shut. And then he'll let you into the shop and let you watch. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. You know, that's this idea about how to set up carburetors is way back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Usually in the 80s, we started using fancy carburetors with mixture control solenoids, electronically doing this. And certainly in the 90s, we went to fuel injection, so we don't have any screws anymore. But there's still lots of people that want to screw screws thinking that's going to be better. There's all kinds of adjustment screws underneath the hood of a fuel injected car, and when you mess with one, you have created a problem that's going to just drive you crazy and cost you a lot of money. So if your car's not idling right, there is a screw on the throttle blades. You can't just screw that screw in or out. You have to synchronize the idle and the mass airflow sensor and the throttle position sensor. They all have to be on the same page. So if you just do the idle, but the mass airflow sensor, the throttle position sensor, they're going to be confused. So it's not like you can just start putting a screwdriver on a bunch of stuff. That's going to be a bad idea. Okay, we talked about handshaking the top hose earlier on, about is your car running at the appropriate temperature. Your car's running at the appropriate temperature if you can't grab a hold of the upper radiator hose and hold on to it for longer than 3 or 4 seconds. Unless, of course, you're some cowboy that just came off the range and your hands are calloused up and you know, you've been rubbing your hands in the dirt for the last 20 years, you probably can hang on to it for 10 seconds or maybe more. But the normal person is not going to be able to handshake that upper hose for longer than 3 or 4 seconds. So that is okay. The temperature is okay. We're not going to feel the upper radiator hose for anything that exceeds that. We're going to look for the radiator cap spitting coolant on the ground. We're going to look for the gauge buried into the red. We're going to look at a lot of other things. But the window for your car is somewhere around 220 degrees. That's what we want it to run at. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. That's where we want it to run at. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, we got anybody in the wings? No problem. Well, we got somebody. Okay. I do want to remind you that I am the trustee for an estate, and the lady had a 2014 Mercedes-Benz ML350. It had 51,000 miles on it, so that's 10,000 miles a year. This car is loaded. It's an all-wheel drive, four-door sport package, 7-speed transmission, wheels, sunroof, heated seats, premium lighted package, chrome package, lane tracking package, rear view camera, trailer hitch, eucalyptus wood package, brushed aluminum running boards. Anyway, it's for auction. The highest bidder at midnight the end of this month is going to buy the car. So if you want to look at this car, or if you want to bid on this car, I can tell you right now that the prices related to this car, wholesale's $20,000 and retail's $25,000. So wholesale is what they're selling for at the auction. Retail is what you would buy this at a dealership typically as a used car. So somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000. I think I have a 21, but I'm not sure. I'm waiting for confirmation. But if you like Mercedes, this ML350 is white, and it's, unfortunately, I'm only allowed to use clean and extra clean to describe it. But if I could use another word, I would call it pristine. So it's even better than extra clean. It's pristine. But the lady has passed away, and her husband is also gone. And so I am liquidating their assets, and this car is one of them. So if you know anybody that wants to buy, it's a sport utility vehicle. It's four doors. But what's nice about this, it's four-wheel drive, all-wheel drive. It also has, it's out of the basic warranty, but it has a Mercedes-Benz extended warranty that carries you 7 years, 75,000 miles. So it still has warranty on it, and it's assumable according to the contacts at Mercedes-Benz. So I don't make a dime on this, folks. I'm not one red cent. As trustee for this estate, my job is to convert assets to trust money and then divide it amongst the people I'm instructed to do that. So that's exactly what I'm doing. So you'd be happy to know that I think I make $15 an hour. And frankly, my wife and I have decided we're going to donate to that to a charity that was in the hearts of both Cliff and Leslie. So if you thought about a Mercedes, then, oh, and by the way, they bought this in March of 14, which is, what, 5 years ago, for $64,167. So if they paid $64,000 4 years later, 5 years later, the price on it is worth somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000. So you're welcome to make a bid. It's a cash deal, and you have to be prepared to buy it, or I'll go to the second bidder. So anyway, we got another hour of car talk, and you're welcome to give us a call, 602-508-0960. You've got somebody I can get the question out?
No.
Okay. Anyway, so the lines are wide open, and there's five of them, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, and my email address is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. I'm an ASE master myself. I've been a master technician for just shy of 30 years. I've been in car repair since 1979. I still am in car repair, but I don't tell you who I am or where my shop is, because that's not what this show's all about. This show's about you. It's about your car problems. And I've been doing radio and car talk about this kind of stuff since 1988 in the Valley. So this ain't my first rodeo. I got gray hair. I've been around the block more than once, and I know right from wrong. So if you want to give us a call, 602-508-0960. We'll see you next hour. We've got another 60 minutes on the road. Yeah.
Chevrolet.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to be here till noon, and if you'd like to join us, you can. Most everybody calls in the last half an hour, but you can get in right now because the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we're going to start with, like, year, make and model of your car, how many miles it's got on it, and then let's talk about the symptoms. It's hiccuping, it's pulling right, it's pulling left, it's got a vibration. The check engine light is on, this is what the number is, and stuff like that. That works well because we can have this exchange. Nevertheless, let me tell you about some old-time car repair. Keep in mind that I started working at a gas station in 1968, but I didn't own my own shop till 1979. Phil at Automatic Transmission has been open since 1968. Larry Harker's up at 38th Avenue and Indian Schools got Phil beat by a year. They've been open in the same place since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. They're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Ellen runs the front, Bob runs the back, and Bob is one of the finest technicians I've ever met. I think he is easily better than I am. He just has tenacity and a fundamental knowledge of cars and how they work and voltage and how it affects everything. He's just a very exquisite and quiet man. But if you have a car that nobody in town can fix, why don't you call Larry Harker's Auto Repair and make an appointment with Bob? Now, he does oil changes all the way to engine swaps and everything in between. But he's really good on the diagnostic side. But air conditioning, water pumps, cooling system, all that stuff's good. But he's really good when it comes to diagnosis. So that's kind of how it all works out. When it comes to car repair, it's really important. And women do it a lot better than men. But the women just talk about symptoms. But the most important part of this is if you can make it happen, you know, those of us that work in this industry, if you don't come in on Monday morning and insist on somebody go drive with you for obvious reasons, If somebody comes in and says, I can show you what I'm talking about, holy mackerel, that is just a huge step in the right direction. I would venture a guess that if you can take the technician out in 15 minutes, not for 3 hours, 15 minutes, and show him how to make it happen, you've saved yourself $50 to $100 worth of diagnostic time. $50 to $100. I'll give you a good example. Oh, by the way, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Just real quick. The other day, my Dodge truck had a clicking noise in the front end. So I took the steering wheel. My hand's at 12 o'clock, and I'm kind of sitting at an intersection. The light's red, and I'm kind of going one fist to the right, one fist to the left. So just ch-ch-ch, and it was click, 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 click. So then when I was driving the car, I was kind of wiggling it back and forth, and I couldn't hear the click, but I was doing, you know, 40 miles an hour or higher. So I drove over to my son's house because I was on that part of the town, and I said, hey, do me a favor. Get up here. I'm going to show you how to make this happen, and I want to crawl underneath the front end. So he says, well, can you tell which side it's at? And I says, no. He says, let me do it, and you look. And he gets down there, and he goes, I can't tell which side it is either. So get underneath there, and I put my hands on the tie rod bar that goes from left to right. And I can feel it on the tie rod bar. And on each end of this bar is a joint. And so I move my hand close to the driver's side, and it changes. And I move my hand to the close to the passenger side, and no question about it, that's broken. That's bad. So I had my son take it to work, and they replaced both tie rod ends because it was just easier that way, and I got 100,000 miles on it. Then they aligned it, and this is what I said to them. Everybody worries when we do work on their cars, especially front-end work, that we're not going to get the steering wheel straight. And nothing wads my panties up more than to have a customer come in with a steering wheel that's not straight after we just charge them a whole lot of money to work on their car. So I said to my son, the click is gone. That's the good news. And the better news is that the steering wheel's straight. And he laughed, and he goes, you have no idea the pressure Adam was under working on your car, knowing how you feel about the steering wheel being crooked. He said he drove that thing all over town to make sure the steering wheel was just as straight as an arrow. So even I'm a little, even I'm a bad customer at times. Okay, Gil, who we got?
We have Eric.
Eric, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. All right. I've got a 2017 GMC pickup. I put a programmer on it a while back for performance. And last 2 weeks ago, I was up in Flagstaff, and my check engine light came on. I drove down to Phoenix thinking it might go away and took it into one of the Happy O'Reilly AutoZone places, and they gave me their expert advice that the code was octane ping. It was knock sensors going off. Eventually it went away. Comes back occasionally if I go on the freeway at an accelerated rate for some time.
Then it goes away. Can you hear it?
No.
Okay. I've fixed that code by replacing the power steering bracket, power steering pump bracket. I've fixed that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Think about it. It's a knock sensor.
Knock sensors?
Yeah.
Okay.
So here's how I test them. I plug in a scanner, something the three-whiskered kid at AutoZone doesn't have because it's a $3,000, you know, what do you mean, really?
I'm joking with you. I understand.
Okay. But the scanner, it gives you a whole bunch of numbers, but if you don't understand the numbers, then... I'm looking at the oxygen, I'm looking at the knock sensor. Okay, I got a hammer in my hand. The motor's running. So it says no, and I hit the alternator bracket with a hammer. And it says yes. And so then I hit this side of the motor, that side of the motor, hit the front of the motor, hit the back of the motor, and every time I hit it, the knock sensor says yes. So I know the knock sensor's alive, and I know it's seeing everything. So I'm thinking to myself, Eric's truck really is got pre-ignition and pinging. So this is what I would have you do. That program is your problem, okay?
Probably.
You got too many settings, and I'll bet you picked the high one. There's 1 through 5, and you probably picked 5, and you should have picked 4.
Hey, I at least admitted it, right?
You're right. And I am bowing down to you right now. I am telling you unequivocally, I'm bowing down to you because very few guys do that. So you got two choices. If you know it comes and goes, you already know the pattern. So I'd put half a tank full of premium in it, and I'll bet that probably takes care of it. So you might run 50-50 between regular and super. On the other hand, you can...
Keeping my foot off the pedal takes care of it, too. But that's pretty hard.
Yeah, it is. It is hard. I just drove up here this morning, and the traffic was really heavy. And there was this one car in the fast lane, and the line behind this group, this person in this car, had to be 30 deep. And finally, this guy with a hot rod Ford truck got just enough room to pull into the right lane, speed up, and pull into the left lane. But it still didn't stop that person. And I was kind of impressed with the speed and the power that he demonstrated because I was about 10 cars back. But, yes, you're right. You got two choices. Mix a little fuel. That'll probably make it go away. Or back up a notch on your programmer, and that'll make it go away. But I do want to tell you, I want you to fix this because pre-ignition is something that's harmful to your motor after a long period of time. So don't roll the dice on that one. Okay?
Okay, I wanted to mention also, I started listening to you this is entertaining. I can listen to this on my Saturdays. This is great. And then you recommend your shops. And then one day I heard Tom from Action Auto on there. I said, now I know he's telling the truth because I've used Tom for years with my fleet of my last business. And he was just a great shop, great guy. So when I heard that he was one of your preferred shops, I was like, I'm not surprised. And you recommend good shops.
Thank you for that. Let me tell you, this has nothing to do with Tom at Action Auto, but... A while ago, we had a complaint on a shop, which I have to deal with maybe one complaint every 5 years. But it was a pretty significant complaint. And at the end of the day, not only did I, but other social services had been involved in this, come to the conclusion the shop needed to give the customer $2,000. So just like with my promise on the internet, if the shop is told to make a refund or fix your car, the shop has to do it, and if they don't, I will, up to $5,000. So I'll fix your car, or I'll give you $5,000, or I'll fix your transmission, or I'll give you your money back, whatever. But the shop immediately wrote a check. My only complaint to him was, why did it take you so long? And I guess in behind the scenes, there was some things I didn't know about. But nevertheless, the customer was very happy. I was very happy, and the shop's still on my list. You know, most people know, I'm a no BS guy. So I know right from wrong, but Action has never even had a complaint. Never. So, and he's been on our list, I would venture a guess, for 10-plus years. So if you're doing business with Tom, you're doing business with a really guy. And by the way, Action Auto's up on I-17 in Deer Valley on the northwest corner. And he's a good guy. I've known him since probably the early 80s. So thank you, Eric. Thank you very much for that. Let me tell you real quick about another really good shop, and that shop happens to be Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel is a shop that works on just diesel. They are die-hard diesel guys, service, repair, and parts. They do both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, up to 1 ton on the Chevy, Ford, Chrysler kind of stuff. They're located south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and they're open Monday through Friday. And they also sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. So Strictly Diesel is a Better Business Bureau A-rated shop, and he does everything from major engine work all the way down to putting some fancy stuff on there to make it run just a little bit better. But Strictly Diesel is owned and operated by Nate, and Nate is a friend of mine, and I just want to tell you, if you ever meet Nate, he's really, really tall. And his hands are the size of tennis rackets. And so I said to him one day, I would hate to be the young man that's courting your daughter, because if you reached out to shake your hand, I'd have to put both my hands out there to shake your hand. Not to mention the fact that if you were going to cuff me on the side of the head, and only old people know what that means, I would hate to have those tennis rackets just kind of bounce off the top of my head. So Nate's a good guy. If you have a diesel problem, Nate would be a great place to go. 602-508-0960. We have open lines available. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. And that's because this is 960 The Patriot, KKNT. So again, for out of state, out of city, 888-960-9696. For those of you here in town, 602-508-0960. Warning, 1 minute after the hour of 11 o'clock. You've still got time to get in. We're here for another 40 minutes, and we've got three lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. He's a hound dog. I'm telling you what, Tom knows more about old hot rods than anybody I really know, but he's also well qualified to work on newer computerized cars. He has a really nice shop, 40th and Greenway, just north and west. He's been around a long time. I've known him for many, many years. We both started in business. Well, we both built our new buildings in 1994 at the same time. But Tom's a good guy. All you have to do is wave that red flag in front of him. You say to him, nobody can fix this car, and you'll just see the hair on his back stand up, and he'll take your keys, and he'll say, I'll call you in an hour. Most of the time, he does call in about an hour, but he does oil changes and everything else. So if you're anywhere near 40th and Greenway, Blackwell Automotive is a good place. Charlie, how can I help you?
Yeah, I was on my way to the store, and I heard you on the radio, so forgive me, it's the first time I've listened to you.
Okay.
But I know you're an Ace One mechanic, but you might be able to help my marriage also. Here is my problem. I finally got my dream car. It's a 215 Chevy Malibu, LTZ, and it's got all the little gadgets that I dreamed of.
Okay.
The problem is that when you turn it on, it has an odor. Now, I've been a janitor for 40 years, so my nostrils got, like, burned out from the Clorox smell. But my wife has sensitive smell. So, you know, she goes, don't you smell that? I go, honey, I'm sorry, I don't. So... And I totally forgot that one of my friends had a 215 Malibu, and they complained about the smell.
Okay, all right. All right. First of all, I don't want you to run in anything at all recirculatory. I don't want you to be in the recirc mode at all. The question is after a while, does that change the smell? Okay? Now, I don't want you to tell her I'm saying this, but we suck air off the passenger side floorboard, okay? And sometimes people, not your wife, God bless, not your wife, but there are people, men and women, that have stinky feet. So I'm telling you to come off recirc. And another thing I want you to do is I don't want you to run your fan speed on low. Never low. If you get too cold, roll your window down a little bit, but I want you to run it in 2, 3, or 4. And here's why. Behind the glove box is the evaporator case. The evaporator case contains your heater and your air conditioning. Both of them have a tendency to sweat. But if you don't blow into that box with enough volume, you develop mold. Okay. So I want you to go to normal on your settings for both hot and cold. And I want you to not run low speed on your fan when you're running air conditioning, which is something you probably won't run for another 30 days. But they also, there's a lot of car washes that have a deodorizing machine that they can kind of deodorize your car. The question really is your wife needs to drive and sit in the passenger side for this reason. You need half, she has to smell the vents on the passenger side and the vents on the driver's side. That will kind of help us figure out where it's at. But that's what I do, okay?
When you say normal, what do you mean normal? I'm sorry.
That's okay. On your air conditioning controls, it says normal and recirc.
Recirc.
Yeah, and I want you to be in the normal mode because I don't want to suck air down by her feet. I want to suck air from outside. So I'm taking outside air and I'm either warming it up and sending it into the car, or I'm taking outside air and cooling it off and sending it into the car. Okay? So the recirculatory takes that passenger side floorboard and then it runs it through hot or cold and sends it back into the car, so it's a circle. Recirculate is a circle. I want to break the circle. I want outside air. All right, I got to take a break. Al, you stay right there. When we come back, and Gil,
we're not at break time yet.
Oh, you know, I was looking at that and I was thinking to myself, did I hit that 20 mark? Okay, Al, I'm going to get to get you right now. How can I help you?
Actually, that Al dropped. We go to Storm.
Storm, okay. Storm, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Here's where I'm at. I've got a 2006 Chevy Uplander. It's got the small V6 in it. It eats starters like crazy. I've owned the vehicle for about 6 years now, and I've been through probably 5 starters.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Well, yeah, a lot. What happens when the starter fails?
It'll start right up until the time that it fails, and then it immediately fails, cranks hard and fails, and then it smokes.
Okay. I don't know. I can tell you right now it's not the starter. I don't care what anybody says.
I don't think it is either, yeah.
I haven't put 5 starters in a car in my life. I've made mistakes in my life, but you know, the real question is what we're missing here is specifics about it's okay and this and this are doing this. But when it's not okay, then this is what it sounds like, this is what it smells like, this is what it does, I know this, I know that. The thing you can do is I would go to marksalem.com and print out FAQ 28. FAQ 28. And it talks about when the starter clicks, what to look for, and if it doesn't click, what to look for, and use the headlights as your voltmeter, and white and bright is good voltage, and yellow or dim is low voltage. And I think, now don't tell me the name of the shop. Is there a shop that's done all 5?
No, I actually did the last one myself.
Okay. All right. Well, the smoke and starter would indicate that we have some major electronic problem, but you're not saying anything about anything else. So if we have an alternator run wild, you haven't said the fan speed, we've burnt off the blower motor relay. You haven't said the windshield wipers flap at 100 miles an hour. you haven't said that my headlights are burning out. So, you know, I'm thinking about all this different stuff, but you're missing a lot of what makes this package go. So all right. I've got is you've replaced five starters and you see them smoking. So, you know, if you were inhaling water and the engine was hydrolocked and you were trying to start it, we'd overheat the starter, but you'd be consuming coolant. So, I mean, there's so much missing here. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Northeast Phoenix.
Okay. I'd probably go over to Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and just ask Bob to just run a basic alternator, regulator, starter, battery test. Let's just start at the beginning. And I think okay. He's probably going to charge you somewhere between $25 and $50, but explain to him what you got. And he's a good diagnostician, but you're not going to wave the red flag in front of him and expect him to fix it so he can say he fixed it. He's in business like all the rest of us. But I really think that would be the very best advice I can give you is let's have somebody look at the basic parameters and see if any of them are out of whack. And I think he can do that. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you call us now. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. You know, out of the corner of my eye, I just saw one of my horses loose. So I'm going to take this break and run outside and see if I can push her back in one of the corrals, which she should have been at. And then the real question is why is she loose in the very beginning? So, Gil, you'll have to cover if I'm a minute late, okay? Welcome back, everybody. It's 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. You're welcome to join us if you'd like, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're talking about cars. We can talk anything you want, but if we're going to talk about a problem, let's talk symptoms. What does it do? What does it not do? What did it used to do that it doesn't do now? Stuff like that. Because that two-way communication is real important. If I'm only as good as the information you give me, and so if we can kind of narrow down where we're at, then I'm pretty sure I can get pretty close with a guess. But I'm only as good as the information that comes into me. So, and there's three answers to every question. Yes, no, I don't know. and I'll get all three from the women, but most of the time from the men, I only get a yes or a no. But I don't know is an acceptable answer as well. 602-508-0960. Okay, real quick. I have a Mercedes-Benz for sale. It's a 2014 ML350. It's a four-door sport utility vehicle. It has 51,000 miles. The folks that own this and bought it are both deceased, and I am the trustee of their estate. This car was purchased for $64,167, and it's for sale right now between $20,000 and $25,000. It's extra clean. It has all-wheel drive. It has everything you can imagine. It has fancy wheels, sunroof, heated seats, premium lighting package. The mirrors automatically dim. It has a chrome accessory package. It has lane tracking. You're driving down the road, and if you leave your lane, it'll shake the steering wheel at you. It's pretty sophisticated. And if you turn on your turn signal and there's a car next to you, it shakes the steering wheel at you and tells you not to make the lane change. So it has a rear view camera, trailer hitch. It has a eucalyptus wood package, which I think is stunning. But I drove this car, and I got to tell you, I'm not trying to sell you on this car. It's one of the finest cars I've ever driven. I think it's comparable to a Jaguar that Renee and I had back in the early 2000s, 2001. We had an XJR four-door, and that car was the greatest car I've ever owned with respect to ride and creature comfort and not dependability, but rides, creature comfort, acceleration, that kind of stuff. So anyway, if you want to bid on this, I'll send you all the information, mark@marksalem.com. The auction ends the last day of this month at midnight. So the last day of March at midnight, I'm done. Whoever has the bid in is going to get the car. So, and then if they don't get the car, the next bidder will. So if you want to take a look at it, it's in Tempe. If you want to you want pictures sent to you, we'll do that too. But everything's over email, so it can be in writing. mark@marksalem.com. Who we got, Gil?
We have Nick.
Nick, good morning to you.
Good morning. I just gassed up this Honda Element. 1990 or
96, and the check engine light came on.
Okay.
122,000 miles.
Okay. I wouldn't have a clue. The check engine light is telling us that. You know,
yeah.
I don't have a clue.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. I just thought I'd call and check.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Okay. Well, the code, if there was a code, and you're not just pulling on both my legs, the code would send us in the general vicinity. And it could have been, you know, yeah, a variety of things. You could have stuffed a fuel tank, and when it started it up, you stuffed the fuel tank. We sucked liquid fuel forward instead of vapor. And then when we got that canister all wet, then the computer complains about that. So if I were you, I wouldn't do anything for the next 2 weeks. I'd just leave it alone and keep driving it. Yep, I wouldn't worry about it. Because what color is your check engine light?
Orange.
That's it. So it's yellow or orange. It's everything on your car is just like a traffic light. Red, yellow, green. That's it.
Okay.
So yellow means caution. Red means stop. And that's where we miss out a lot is that stop one we don't see. But they keep me in business, and I'm pretty happy about that. So, but in your case, yeah, I just kick back for a couple of weeks and see what happens.
Well, and that could be because I did stuff it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to tell you something. I'm as guilty as anybody else. You know, you're supposed to stop after one or two clicks. And sometimes I'm one of those guys that I want to round it off. So if we're, you know, we're at 72 cents, I'm taking it to a dollar even. I don't care what you say, and sometimes I pay the price. So are you one of those six son of a guns?
Sort of. I just like to make sure it's full.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, you know, why stop sooner than you have to?
1 minute.
I know, but in reality, from the time it clicks to the time that you finally figure out it's full, I'll bet you it's not 1 gallon difference. And when you recognize...
Oh, right. You're right.
Yeah. So it's a sickness. They make medicine for that, and I'd be happy to share my doctor's name with you, but you'll have to email me, okay? All righty.
Okay.
Thanks, Nick. 602-508-0960. I can help with you with your marriage. I can help with you with your girlfriend or your boyfriend. I can do that Dr. Phil stuff all day long. Now, I don't have any credentials to do that, but I have plenty of experience. So if you wives want to call in, 602-508-0960, and complain about your husband's auto mechanic prowess. Now, forget about all the rest of the prowess stuff, but if you want to ask questions that your husband has said to you and ask me if I believe him or not, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, you've still got time to call in. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Full service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been in the Deer Valley area, in the North Phoenix area, since 1983. Tom and his staff are well known for good diagnostics, for fair estimates, and they fix your car. The sin is that you give an you charge for diagnostic, you give an estimate for a particular repair, and the customer okays it, and then you pick up your car, and on your way home you go, I still got the same problem. That's the sin. But you won't have that problem with Action, because they're good enough to know that that's part of the final portion of the repair of that car is go drive it and make sure. So Tom, I've known him since the early 80s. He's a good guy. I know him and his wife and his family. And if you lived up there and you ask me who to send you to, I would send you to Tom at Action Auto. All righty, we're going to go to Pete. Pete, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, sir. I've got a 2001 XJ Sport Jeep Cherokee. And it's got the locks tend to spasm at any moment of the day. And also, intermittently, the passenger windows do not go up or down. They cannot be controlled by the independent buttons. And there's no shortage of XJ advice on the Internet. Most of it seems to be half-baked. But I did come across a guy who said if you take apart the front door panels and take the lock systems out and then touch them up with and re-solder all of the contacts for the buttons, that the short would go away, because after, you know, 20 years, these cars are getting kind of old now. The solders tend to break, which is what is causing the short. Does that sound like it has any credence to you?
That sounds like a really big mess. If you hadn't have filled me in on the backstory of this guy, blah, 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 the fact that you have intermittent operation of locks and windows, it's all controlled by the master switch. And the master switch gets 90% of the use.
Right.
So here's how you check if it's the master switch is, you know, when the window won't roll up on the right side, go see if it'll roll up with the switch on the door. But
it always rolls up with the master switch, just not the independent switch.
Okay.
And I don't even have a window lock on because I don't have small kids in the car.
Okay. All right. Well, is the problem with the master switch on the driver's door, or is it'll work on the driver's door, but it'll work on the master switch, but it won't work on the passenger side rear? Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. So for instance, I'll be driving down the road and I'll hit a bump and my locks will start spasming, you know, going up and down. And I have to literally reach over to the passenger side and hold the door lock down for a second to break the circuit. And then it'll quit for a while, but it always starts back up.
Okay. Well, you're not breaking the circuit by holding the lockdown. You're just overheating the circuit. I'll tell you, I've never done what he's suggesting you do. I think at the end of the day, if it's not the master switch, by the time you put a soldering iron on the backside of that printed circuit board of that master switch, you're going to destroy it. So I would politely decline to carry out that repair on your car. I would think that it would be a lot more, it would be a lot better. I mean, we can go in and disable the locks circuit and just see what happens. Does the lock, after we disable the lock circuit, does the locks continue to cycle? Ooh, then we have some outside interference. If not, right, then we got to figure that. You've got door locks or door switches on all four doors. So is one of them rattling? Is one of them intermittently pushing the door switch, which cycles the locks and cycles the windows and tells everybody the door is closed? So walk around there, shut the doors, walk around there and wiggle the doors, and if you've got one of them that's a little looser than the other, then I would adjust the latch to suck the door in. So there's no reason for it to be cycling because it's got a bad door switch, but obviously we have a bad connection. The question is where? But, you know, if you wanted to get one of those little pencil soldering irons from them, what I think you would do first is pull out the master switch, which, by the way, is a job all of its own. And I would turn it upside down, and I would operate everything, and I would take a small wooden sharp, I'd go steal the little round pointed wood thing that your wife has in her makeup bag. Get that, and then I would be operating stuff, and I would be touching the different terminals to see if I could change things. That's what I'd be doing. But the button inside is the contact. We're just talking about the solder joints on the back. If the solder joint was bad, it would be bad. I've never seen a situation that continuously would fix itself and then break and fix itself. Usually, it gets to the point where it's just broken. So I don't even know where to send you.
When you say master switch, are you talking about the entire? I'm looking at it right now. It's a conglomeration of two windows, the door locks, and then it's a total of six switches for the master switch.
It's on the driver's door. That's the master switch.
Right.
Yeah, it controls all the locks and all the windows right there. So
yeah, I've been putting up with this for about a year now because I'm a little door panel removed challenged.
Yeah.
I don't care to do it that much, so.
Well, and I want to tell you something. The door panel on any car is expensive, and it's not uncommon for once a year for somebody to bring in their cardboard door panel just torn up. and there is a special forked tool that you use, but sometimes the screws are hidden. So you stick the fork tool underneath there, and you start prying it, and you break the door panel, and lo and behold, underneath this piece of trim over here is the screw that holds this corner of it down. So there is a risk. Here's what I think you should do. I think you should call Worldpac. It's a wholesale parts company, but they sell Jaguar parts. I think you should say to them, I know this is very unusual, but I'd like to know who you sell a lot of Jaguar parts to, because I would like to patronize them with my XJ. So if you could tell me one of your best customers, I would like you just to tell me it's a good guy, and maybe you would look at making sure he pays his bills and making sure he has the same technicians over years of peer time. And they'll say, well, let me have you talk to Rod. I don't know if they will or not, but Rod, I'm the Jaguar guy. Who would you send me to? Pretend I'm your brother-in-law and you like me. Oh, I'm going to send you to this Jaguar shop. That's what I would do. That's how I would handle it. I don't have one to tell you. I'm sorry.
You're very kind. Thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome, Pete. Thank you. That's a good conversation, because there's pros and cons and there's risks and rewards. Now, there is one other possibility. Although Pete said that he's been living with this for a long time, you can do three things. You can try to diagnose it, or you can guess, make intelligent guesses, or you can wait till it gets worse and easier to find, or wait until it fails and then it's really easy to find. And if it's not something that's going to cause the car to leave you stranded in the middle of the night on a dark highway filled with goblins and witches, then it's okay to wait. And sometimes the waiting game it produces some symptoms that we recognize. So there may be a relay in his lock circuit that causes those locks to vibrate and open and close and click and click lock and clicked open. And sometimes it's just a matter of replacing the relay, which might be $20, and seeing if that works. That's the kind of risk and reward you have. It's, if you're guessing, it's, you're either going to win or you're going to lose, and the odds are that you're going to lose, but a $20 relay might be a good one. So nevertheless, that's what I think. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City, and he's been around since 1982. Chuck and his family and his son Derek are proud because they have good quality service. They've been around a very long time. They've serviced the Sun City area for a very long time. And they certainly, in my opinion, are the largest and the most trusted source for complete automotive services. So if you live in Sun City, they're north of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, Auto Dynamics. It's a good place, and one of the things that they do, which is unusual, is they don't pay their technicians any kind of commission. They're all on salary. Therefore, there's no motivation to sell you stuff that you don't need, because the technician's not on commission. It's an interesting concept. We're all kind of watching that to see how that turns out. So he's kind of doing the experiment for all of us, but there'll be some that do and some that don't, but he's going in the right direction. So that's Auto Dynamics. All righty. No more callers. 602-508-0960. Gil, are you? Oh, we got a caller. Who is it, Gil?
Yes, we have Richard.
Richard, how can I help you this morning?
Well, you may want to take this offline, but I just heard you talking about the gentleman that has the...
Did we just
really do you really call it a Jaguar and not a Jaguar?
You know what?
You're the car guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me raise my hand and say, Richard, there is times that I mispronounce a word. If you're willing to focus on that, you can kiss my saddle and move on. But if you can't accept that every once in a while I mispronounce somebody's name or anything like that, then I'm sorry. We can't be friends. So it can be a Jaguar or it can be a Jaguar. And there's all kinds of, but you're the only one that's going to coach me on my speech. So I'm going to tell everybody, my hands is raised, I probably didn't pronounce that correctly. But take your complaints somewhere else. Oh, boy. And, hey, Gil, do you know how to pronounce J-A-G-U-A-R or whatever it is?
I think it's Jaguar.
Yeah, Jaguar or Jaguar or whatever. I don't know. I had one. No one ever said, that's not the car you have. I don't care. And more than likely, Richard is a friend of mine, and he's just trying to make fun of me, but I'm... glad you dumped him, because I just don't have somebody look it up for us. Somebody look up. We've got about 6 minutes left in the show, maybe less. Look up the correct pronunciation for Jaguar or Jaguar, And I don't know. We'll end the show that way. Nevertheless, it's a situation with car repair. It's communication. So what really works well is if you're looking at your... Here's the deal. This is what's going on right now, and this is the most important advice I can give you. Right now, we've decided, my industry has decided, certain people in my industry have decided that they know more than your owner's manual. And so they're telling you that you need to have transmission flushed, power steering flushed, and your cooling system flushed. And you open up your manual, and your car has 50,000 miles on it, and the manual calls for those to happen at 100. I'm just using a big example, okay? So then you say to them, wait a minute, why are you calling for all these services at 50? And it's really at 100. And then they say, oh, that manual's not written for Arizona. Or they say, the technician looked at all three of them and has determined that now's the time to do it. There's a variety of excuses, but the manual is written for all 50 states. There is no such thing as a manual. And if they say the manual's not written for Arizona, may I suggest you say, without a smile on your face, well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let me order an Arizona manual so that I can be up to date on my car. And you're going to hear somebody stutter for a long time because they don't make a manual for Arizona. That manual's for all 50 states. So our industry right now, here's the problem. The newer model cars, we used to have 30, 60, 90 mile stop services. So we did some service at 30, 60, and 90. Some of the newer model cars from 4 or 5 years ago to now, they're calling for services between 75 and 100. So other than tire rotations and some oil changes, it really is different. So there's a lot of places that are making their own up. They may say, well, not for Arizona. You want to change your transmission fluid at 50,000, not 100, because Arizona, it's hot here. Okay. How does he know that my fluid is bad? I mean, can he show me? Well, no, he can't come out of the garage. He just said that he knows your fluid's bad. Okay, he has these little test strips, and he sticks it in your fluid, and the test strip said it was bad. Well, can he just show me that? No, he can't. So the best thing you can do to save yourself money, this will save you more money than anything else you've ever done, and any other advice that I would give you is open up and dog-ear the maintenance schedule on your car. And if anybody suggests something, you say, just a minute, you pull it out of your car, you hand it to them, and you say, tell me where it's on this. I just don't want to look, but just show me here where it says that I need to change my transmission fluid at 50,000 miles. I think I read it, and I think it was 100,000 miles, but I've been wrong before. Can you show me? Those are the kinds of things. And then last but not least, you say, you know what, just write it down on the back of your card. You need a transmission service, it's $300, and just initial it and hand it to me. If they're lying to you, they aren't going to give you any piece of paper like that, I can guarantee you. They're going to come up with some kind of an excuse why they can't. So those are the tips that will get you through the snakes in our industry and the people that are more interested in buttering their bread than fixing your car. My email address, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you want to buy that Mercedes I talked about or give me a bid, then mark@marksalem.com. If you got a car question, mark@marksalem.com.